Meeting will come to order. We have a quorum, so let's take care of the minutes first before we move on here. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes from the March 20th meeting? Committee Representative Detmer moves approval of the minutes. Any discussions or corrections to the minutes? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Minutes approved. Okay, Representative Ward, are you ready to present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm asking Representative Newton to join me up here. We have a few testifiers in the audience as well. Representative Newton had introduced the same exact bill in conjunction with me, so I just wanted to give a few points. This is a bill that would make September 16th American Legion Day, and I'm very proud and honored to be presenting this bill. My dad and my grandpa are past post commanders of the Proctor American Legion. I am a member of the American Legion through the Sons of American Legion program. I didn't realize that, you know, I knew I couldn't be in the Legion, thinking that because I was disabled and I was a classified 4-H during the draft, or 4-F, excuse me. And but I didn't realize I could join the Legion until recently, and so I joined the Legion as through the Sons of Legion program. You know, this bill is to honor and celebrate the 90-plus years of the American Legion Club as they have been helping and supporting our veterans in our communities. And in your packet, you should have a sheet that looks like this, what the American Legion does. I'm hoping that I know that my LA sent it down. Is it in your packets, members? Thank you. So I'd like to point out five, and you can look through this, obviously, but, you know, I want to talk about just five of the items that what the American Legion does in the last 90 years they've been in existence. They award college scholarships to children whose mothers and fathers have sacrificed their lives in the global war on terrorism. They volunteer about 1 million hours every year at 160 VA medical facilities nationwide. They donate 100,000 pints of blood annually to the American Red Cross. Through its Heroes to Hometowns program, they work with the community to welcome back the returning veterans and help them make a transition to civilian life. And they sponsor over 5,000 American Legion baseball teams, which probably many of us participated and played in. I know I did as well, and during the summer. And they, you know, there's about 100,000 plus ball players that participate in that each and every summer. And they do so much for our communities. And so, you know, the purpose of this bill is to give another day to say thank you to the service of the American Legion vets and for all the service that they've given to our nation and our state and our communities. So, members, I ask for your support in passing the House File 2538 to show our veterans how much we appreciate, respect, and value each and every one of them and their families. With that, I'll turn over to Representative Newton, and then I think we have a couple testifiers from the audience, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Newton, before you begin, would you like to move Representative Ward's bill?
Yes, I'd like to move the bill.
Okay,
Ward.
Representative Newton moves House File 2538, and that it be brought before the committee and referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. Go ahead,
Good. Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be very brief. I did introduce a similar bill, so when it gets here, we'll kill it. I think besides having
you're talking about your bill,
my bill. Yeah,
I just want to clarify that.
Besides having Coon Rapids as the American Legion baseball champion last year, this is a plank in the platform for the Legion. And when they had their state convention, this was one of the things that they had asked that that we at the legislature do. And with that, I'm sure members of the Legion would like to add to it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Good.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And could you please identify yourself for the tape also?
My name is Roger Ball. I am the Department Legislative Chairman for the American Legion. Our commander would be here today, Department Commander, but he's traveling the state with the National Commander who is here, and our National Executive Committee man, Ray Dzirk, is also traveling with the National Commander. He came in yesterday, and we're going to show him our beautiful Minnesota. He's from Texas originally, so... I currently serve as the American Legion Department Legislative Chairman. It's my pleasure to be here today to testify on this bill designating September 16th of each year as American Legion Day. The American Legion is the world's largest veterans service organization, and Minnesota is one of the top 10 largest departments in the organization. In Minnesota, nearly 100,000 wartime veterans and servicemen and women fill our ranks. Together, we contribute to the ideals of community, state, and nation. In the towns, small and large, the American Legion is there to help veterans, their families, and the children and youth of the community. It is not just what we do, it is who we are. The Minnesota American Legion is both appreciative and grateful for this formal recognition and strongly supports House File 2538. Our thanks to Representative Ward, you, Mr. Chairman, and your committee members for the work you do for Minnesota veterans. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Ball. Any questions for Mr. Ball from the committee? All right, thank you. Anybody else who might wish to testify on the bill? No? Okay. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, just like thank you, Representative Ward, for bringing it forward. I know I think all of us have American Legion posts in our communities, and many of us are members of that post. And on Forest Lake, Post 225 has been a real big supportive of programs within our community and our youth and so forth. So just thank you for bringing it forward.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am also a member of the Legion Post up in Rice, Minnesota, 473. I guess my question, Representative Ward, would be, given the American Legion here is requesting a day, then what about the VFW and the Order of the Purple Heart and wounded Vietnam veterans? And I mean, there's a whole myriad of service organizations that are out there that have specific targets, and why would we want to specify one, and then are we going to see a whole flood of bills coming from other organizations then to designate days?
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Severson, thanks for that question. And I think I believe you will be seeing another bill regarding the VFW for sure. Representative Severson, I know how strong you are in support of veterans in the military operations and veterans affairs. And I believe that any time that we can take a day to say those five words, thank you for your service to veterans, to current military folks, to anybody that has given so much to our country, to us, to our communities, to our nation, to our state. Anytime we can have that opportunity to do that, thank you for your service. I hope all of them come forward, Representative Severson, and ask for a day because they're giving every day of their lives for us. So I don't have a problem with all of them saying, you know, we would like to have a day for our wounded warriors or whatever. We have 365 days in a year, and so I think we have room to support and thank every member of the military in everything they do.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that. I agree. I guess my question, my last question would be to House Research, or is there ever any fiscal note that's attached to this when we do this designation? I don't know that there's any implementation other than the ink that it's required.
Mr. Cleary.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Severson, not that I know of.
Okay.
No fiscal note to my knowledge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Severson. You know, we do have Veterans Day, and I know that both the VFW and American Legions are very involved in Veterans Day and Memorial Day. I would assume that for American Legion Day, I'm sure that's going to be more of an internal thing with the American Legions around the state that would have some special type of event going on with the American Legion itself. So, but I don't think it's going to take anything away from what we have as Veterans Day or Memorial Day in the state of Minnesota. So, thank you.
All right. Anything further, committee? Ready to vote? Okay. Representative Newton renews his motion that House File 2538 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The bill is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Okay. Representative Severson. Okay, Representative Severson, did you want to start with 2808?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that. Mr. Chair, I would like to move House File 2808 in front of the community for consideration and possible passage, and I want to speak to this for probably just a few moments, and then I'll explain my motion here in a second. Mr. Chair and members, we kind of go back a lot in this committee back to the things that transpired after Vietnam and the treatment of our Vietnam veterans, and when they came home, they were not treated with the respect that they were due. Part of that process precipitated some policies that were enacted that proved to be pretty detrimental to their ability to transition back into our society. Many of them came home with issues dealing with all kinds of things that they experienced over there that we have now come to know as post-traumatic stress syndrome and many other maladies that they ended up suffering with that we as a country refuse to acknowledge. That's one of the reasons for this particular Bill 2808, which deals with arraignment. And the heart of the bill really is that when a service member comes back and they're dealing with that transitional process, they often don't get the proper support groups. They go into issues that are problematic, and they deal adversely with those issues. They get picked up by law enforcement, and law enforcement takes them in front of the judicial system. The problem is that currently there is no way of identifying a veteran, and many of them will not self-identify merely because shame or whatever the issue is. And the courts end up taking them through a process that in light of their past experience, does not do justice to the real intent that individual had, I believe, during the crime. House File 2808 is a bill that begins to mitigate some of that process by allowing the courts to ask the question, are you a veteran? And in doing that, the courts then can take into consideration past service, and they can also allow treatment from the Veterans Administration for some of those maladies. This is a bill that was taken a couple of years ago, I believe, and a varied form of that was passed. And as a result of that, there has been action that has been taking place in the courts and the prosecutor's office, and there has been progress made. In fact, in the near future, there will be a pilot program that will come out that basically does this. However, one of the problems we're going to run into here is because there has been a move to do this outside of the legislative mandates. Because when we put legislative mandates on, we also mandate that there are particular criteria that have to be adhered to, and typically there's a fiscal note that's involved in that process. The courts are in no position right now to be burdened with another unfunded mandate that would create animosity both from the bench and the prosecutor's side. I'll say that there is negotiations that have been going on, and they are in good faith, and they are making significant progress in this process. So having said that, my goal is not to jeopardize those negotiations that are currently going on by trying to force a hand that doesn't necessarily need to be forced. I would like to make one motion here and put the bill in the form that I had intended it to do. Mr. Cleary has done good work on putting this bill together for us, and there's an amendment that I would like to have added onto the original bill, and it's the H2808A1 amendment. And this just clears up some of the language and makes it a little clearer for the bill itself. And Mr. Chair, members, if I could move that to be added on to the bill, I'd appreciate it.
Okay. Representative Severson moves the H2808A1 amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? Okay. All in favor of adopting the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Amendment's adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And we've got the bill in the form we'd like it. At this time, I would ask, Mr. Chair and members, that we would lay this bill over, and we are going to be in negotiations with the county attorney and with the judicial side to determine what kind of pressure this would put on them. And if it puts undue pressure on them, then we will probably just leave it on the table, just lay it over. If it seems that we can benefit the cause at all by moving this forward, or things are not working with the intent that we had originally intended, then we will ask, I'll come back to the committee, ask that it be taken off the table, and then we'll move it through the process. It would have to go up to Veterans and Ag, and then over to civil law or to public safety policy. So at this time, I'd ask that we lay the bill over, Mr. Chairman. Okay,
Representative Severson, before we do that, Representative Leader has a question.
Yes.
Oh, I guess he doesn't. Okay. Anybody else have a question before we lay the bill over? Okay, we'll lay over House File 2808.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And
okay, Representative Severson, House File 2809.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a bill that's been before us before. In fact, last year we had the workings of this bill. We passed it out of committee. We did a great service to our veteran-owned businesses, and we had it placed in the Ag and Vets Policy Bill, which was in entirety included into the bill, and the bill passed off the House floor, and everyone here voted for it. It was approved, signed by the governor, and then subsequently in the government ops bill, there was a provision that was put in to remove some of the language here and then limit the amount of benefit that veteran-owned businesses would receive from the contract bid contract portions of the bill. It was restricted to members. It was restricted to businesses that were established after September 11th and subsequent to that, and also to disabled veteran-owned businesses. Since that transpired, we have received correspondence from some Vietnam veterans, from some Desert Storm Gulf War veterans who say, why are you discriminating against us? It's a great question. Why are we? And so what this bill does is reinstate that process so that all veteran-owned businesses have the ability to have that 6% consideration on state bids. And so, members, I would love to have discussion if we want to move forward on that, on this particular process, but I've got Mr. Jerry Kaiser here, who is wanting to testify on behalf of this bill as well.
All right, Mr. Kaiser.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the council. I live at 2674 McCubbin Street in Roseville, Minnesota, and I am the Vice Chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council, representing over 40 of the major veterans organizations in the state of Minnesota. And I was intricately involved in the passing of this particular bill last year. And as a combat Vietnam veteran, I would be excluded from that, but that's okay because I don't want one of those jobs anyway. I wholeheartedly agree with Representative Severson's change to this. It really kind of clears the way for us to those individuals who and companies that want to be able to bid on this. It's not giving them a job. It's just letting them be able to bid on the jobs, and it goes on who's the lowest bidder. And that, I think, is only fair. I don't think there's a fiscal note on it in the fact that it is just giving the opportunity to some of these other veterans. 9/11 number was there specifically to maybe to encourage the younger veterans coming back in their business entrepreneurship. However, those jobs are usually their younger folks don't have those positions yet that they can actually do that. So I think this would level the field, and not everybody and their brother is going to be applying for these positions or these bids. So it's I think it's fair, and United Veterans Legislative Council supports this wholeheartedly. It is in your that Commander's Task Force book that has the United Veterans Council, the County Veterans Service Officers, and the Commander's Task Force's support of their all those different programs. So thank you for your time, sir.
Representative Severson.
Just a few facts just for a refresher on the provisions on this. There are approximately 483 veteran-owned and disabled veteran-owned businesses. The targeted group, DBE, consists of women and minority groups, of which there are about 146,000 businesses. The contention was that this would detract from the DBE targeted-based contracts. And currently, the DBE using up their allotted 6% only use about 2.5%. So it was never really a contention that they were going to cut into the DBE business sector, but in addition to that. And so I think the arguments as we go forth will probably be that there is some positioning that's going on here. I think there's plenty for everyone. The bottom line on it is we have people who have served their country and typically deal with issues just as in the bill previously. They've overcome those issues. They have got a business going. This would be a benefit to them and just a way for our state to say thanks for it, and we recognize your service. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question on line 2.26. I'm wondering what Public Law 109-461 is, and the reason I'm wondering that is that right after that on 2.27 and 2.28, we're taking out the requirement that a majority of the owners are recently separated veterans. Now, the recently separated part I don't have a problem with, but is this changing it so that a business can have, you know, 1/1,000th of a percent a veteran, and then they can qualify for this, or why is it necessary to take out that whole part on 2.27 and 2.28 instead of just the recently separated veterans? And maybe Jim Clary would be better to answer the question. He might have a better idea. I don't mean to put you on the spot, Representative Severson. I'm just curious as to what 109-461 is.
Yeah. Mr. Cleary.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Faust, I'd be happy to try to answer that question. One of the biggest challenges for executive agencies is determining what is a veterans-owned business, and so they have to study it in depth and certify it. To get around that costly certification process, the original legislation last year decided to piggyback on the federal definition, the Federal Small Business Administration's definition of veteran-owned business, such that if a small business is verified, they use the term verified, I believe here, by the Federal Small Business Administration, then it is automatically certified for purposes of this Minnesota program. Now, under the federal definition, it has to be a majority, a business that's majority owned by veterans, not just 1/1000%, but actually 51%. Now, and so this is a mechanism by which we can very efficiently and quickly certify businesses as eligible, using criteria that Minnesota would want to use anyway. Exactly the same criteria. May I point out one thing here? For example, one implication: under the current law, a business that's owned by a recent veteran, an Iraqi war veteran, and her father, who may be a Gulf War veteran, 1991, or a Cold War veteran, a Korean War veteran, a Vietnam veteran, World War I veteran. Yeah, let's say that business that's equally owned 50% each by that Iraqi war veteran and her father, who's also a veteran but older, would not qualify under this program because it's not majority owned by a recent veteran or by a disabled veteran. Well, this would open it up and allow that business to qualify too. If I can make one other comment, it's my understanding that the law requires the state of Minnesota, when it's contracting for these goods and services, to take fully 25% of the value of those services and divide them up into small enough contracts so that small businesses can compete for them realistically. So really, they have 25% that they could compete for, and it's of that only a couple percent are actually being used by women and minority-owned businesses. And so that speaks to Representative Severson's point that by allowing veterans to compete for the rest of that 25% of those small business contracts, it probably wouldn't make a dent. All of that being said, keep in mind I'm not an expert on this. That's what I think I know, right? 98%.
Thank you, Mr. Cleary.
Yeah, if I can, Mr. Chair, that was very good, and that's exactly what I needed to know, so thank you.
Representative Severson.
Mr. Chair, as well, I think there would be a benefit to this process because the bid process, it's let, as it would have to be determined by the Department of Administration or MMB in order to determine whether the company was in fact fitting the criteria in the law the way we have set it, has to determine whether or not that company was established on or before or after September 11th, 2001. So this would basically erase that requirement and just say if they're a veteran-owned business, they're qualified.
All right, thank you. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, what we're doing here is that a veteran's a veteran regardless when you served, and we're just correcting the work that we did last year. It really upset me when it passed this committee, passed all the committees, passed the floor on the House, and then things were changed. And I think people need to realize when we work hard in a committee that we see that something's good for our veterans, that we need to follow it through, and this is what Representative Severson is doing. He's following through, making the corrections so it's back where we wanted it before. And thank you, Representative Severson, for bringing this forward. A veteran's a veteran, regardless of when you served.
All right. Thank you, Representative Detmer. Representative Doty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if this is for Representative Severson or Mr. Cleary. The first part of this is, what do we use for the definition of small business? And more specifically, the last section of this, the effective date, do we have a problem because we don't have the word small in front of the word businesses in 2.33?
Representative Severson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think, is Jim Cleary still here? Yeah. I'm not sorry, Jim Rhodes. If we could have Mr. Rhodes come down. He is from Department of Administration. He's typically got the answers on the definition of a small business. I used to remember the numbers, that was last year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Jim Rhodes from Department of Administration. First of all, this is basically the same language, and the reason there's no fiscal note is because we're using the federal guidelines. So Mr. Cleary, I think, would know more about the small business part of it. Can you take a stab at that? Because, frankly, that's not my bailiwick. Thanks for the compliment.
Sorry.
No, no,
I'm
thanks
sorry.
For the compliment. I appreciate it, but it makes me feel good.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Cleary,
if I may remind the committee, Jim Rhodes was former chair of this committee not
that
so long ago.
Help, Mr. Cleary, when I don't know the answer.
And a darn good one. Right? Pretty much comparable to the current one, may I say. No. Mr. Chairman, I'm not exactly sure. I have read it before. I think it's something like $10 million of business or less in a given year of gross receipts would constitute a small business. Or for a professional organization, I think it's 100 employees or less, let's say for a law firm. It's pretty good sized. But again, I'm not exactly sure. I would like to follow up, and I'll put that on the bill summary.
Or, Mr. Chairman, if you prefer, I can have our department get something together, and we'll send you a letter or an email, and then you can forward on to the committee. Would that may make your life easier? Just definition of small business.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Rhodes.
Thank you.
Representative Doty.
And to the second part of that, do we have a problem because we don't say small in that last line? And are we leaving this open to interpretation that that's all businesses by not saying small there? I'd just like an opinion on that.
Wise to
Mr. Cleary.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Doty, may I refer you to line 2.25, for example? Better known small business. Maybe it should be where we do say being either a veteran-owned small business or a service-disabled veteran-owned small business, but you must be suggesting we put it elsewhere, too.
Mr. Chair, I'm not really sure I'm suggesting anything. Just that we are using the term small business all throughout this until we get to the effective date, and then we look like we have just made it all-inclusive. And I'm just asking for your opinion if that's a good idea.
Okay. Now I'm tracking Representative Doty.
Mr. Cleary.
I'd be happy to entertain.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Severson.
I think the fact that it says on line 232, this section is effective and applies to businesses that, so it's referring back to the previous section that is addressed small businesses. Mm-hmm. So we could add it in there. I'm sure it would maybe be some clarification. I'm not sure that it's necessary. Because it's addressing this section, the previous section.
Representative Doty, any further thoughts? Okay. That's it on that topic. Okay, Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Severson, for bringing this forward. We worked on it last year,
we did.
And we're both caught by surprise by what happened on the floor at the end. I would like to suggest that on lines 2.25 and 2.26 that we delete or a service-disabled veteran-owned small business. And the reason I say that is that if this applies to all veterans, it automatically includes anyone who's service-disabled, unless Mr. Cleary has something there.
Mr. Cleary.
Yes. Yes. Mr. Chairman, Representative Newton. Currently, the reason we drafted it that way is currently the Federal Small Business Administration verifies a veteran-owned small business as either one or the other, as either a veteran-owned small business or a disabled veteran-owned small business. And so as long as we're piggybacking on their definitions, we wanted to use the same terminology they use, yeah. So that it's real clear that if it's verified as either one or the other, it is certified for purposes of this program. So I think we want to keep that separate. I think we want to use this terminology.
Representative Newton?
Yes, thank you for the explanation, Mr. Cleary. It makes sense only because the federal government would do something so convoluted.
Thank you. Anything further, committee members? Okay, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the discussion. It's always good to have a lot of eyes look at these things, take them through, and kind of work out the kinks as we go forward. And the refreshing, I think, will be good as we take it forward in the committees. I think also in the veteran and service-disabled veteran-owned businesses at the federal level, there are differentiations in the contract awards as well. I can't be sure. I'll have to check on that. But members, I appreciate the ability, the support for this provision as we go through, and I think it'll send a clear message to our veterans again that we aren't trying to divide and conquer. We're trying to bring the benefits forward that they have all worked for. And so I appreciate the support, the discussion, and Mr. Chair, thank you for the time.
Okay. Anything further from committee members? Representative Severson renews his motion that House File 2809 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Sterner. Welcome to the committee, Representative Sterner.
Oh, thank you, Chair Coonan, and members of the Veterans Committee today.
Representative Sterner, we'll have Representative Newton move the bill.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 2908.
All right, committee. Representative Newton moves House File 2908 and that the bill be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. Representative Sterner.
All right. Well, thank you. This morning I have with me Colonel Eric Elness with the 34th Infantry Division, commonly referred to as the Red Bulls, with me. And I'm here for a resolution trying to instruct President Obama to have Secretary of Defense Gates make payment to the Red Bulls that they were promised for serving another extra 4 months during their deployment. And it's been a while since they've been paid. So I'm here to ask the House to have a formal resolution to be able to, you know, work with the, you know, to pay them on time and such, or pay them as quickly. Excuse me, they haven't paid them on time. Pay them as quickly as possible.
All right, thank you, Representative Sterner. Colonel Allness.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Colonel Eric Allness, Department of Military Affairs. As I was sitting up there, I was thinking it's been nearly 3 years since I first started addressing this, but I realize it's been over 3 years now since DOD initially issued the policy for the PDMRA respite leave or the bonus overtime, as you heard in the news. And numerous times over the last 3 years, I thought, it's finally going to get fixed. It's finally going to get fixed, and it hasn't been fixed. More recently, there's been a lot of action. In fact, Congress passed a law that authorized the services to pay this benefit last October 28th and gave the services 1 year in order to issue implementation guidance to get this issue resolved. But it's been almost 4 months since that law has been passed, and the services have not issued that implementation guidance. As a result, there's been numerous efforts to urge the Department of Defense to make that, to come out with that implementation guidance. And actions like this really help get attention of the senior leadership to help move that bureaucracy along. So actions like this are very helpful to urge the senior leadership to pay attention to this issue and get it resolved so these people get the funds that they earned, and thus they can continue their lives and make some of those payments, as many of us have tough economic circumstances, and help resolve that so they can be successful. Any questions? That concludes my testimony.
All right. Thank you, Colonel Allness. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, this is the same group of soldiers that came back 1 day short of getting their full Montgomery GI benefits. Isn't that right, Colonel?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is in fact correct. 1,172 of them came back with orders for 729 days that limited their ability to get the GI Bill and required individual packets for them to submit to the Army Board of Military Record Corrections so that they could qualify for the full benefits, which they indeed earned. Just as a happenstance, too, those people deployed for 22 months. That was more than the average Vietnam-era conscript who deployed. They served more time on active duty than them, but they were not considered a full veteran by that measure.
Thank you.
Representative Denton.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I guess we just got another case here, another kick in the rear end, and I think we need to send a message back to Washington that they need to clear this up as soon as possible. So.
Thank you. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, my son was in there. He was, indulge me, just he was, he signed up to go over there, got married 2 weeks before he went over there, and when he found out he was extended, he was not a happy camper. That's pretty funny. But, Colonel, is this a, the Pentagon policy? Is this coming out of the DOD budget, and then is DFAS responsible for implementing the policy coming off of the Pentagon then? Or what's the holdup here? I'm curious.
Colonel Aldous.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, yes, it was a DOD policy issued in January of 2007, and they initially thought, well, all we have to do is give people some additional time off. They didn't consider that approximately 45% of their force is reserve component, that when ordered to active duty, they're on orders for a set number of days. And it took approximately 9 months for them to come out with implementation guidance for the reserve component, which said, we'll extend the orders for the time, additional time they earned. Unfortunately, there was approximately 22,000 service members nationwide who were demobilized during that time frame because of the surge that earned the benefit, but they didn't have the implementation instructions to get the benefit. As a result, DOD took almost the entire next year doing a research, finding out how could they pay, and then the decision was, well, we don't have legal authority to make retroactive payments, so they requested Congress take action. At that time, it was too late in the session. The NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act, had already passed the House, and the Senate did not, because of different reasons, did not accept any amendments on the floor for the NDAA. The next time it came up was then this year, when the National Defense Authorization was backed on October 28, 2009. So that was as quick as Congress could act. But you could see there's a number of stumbling blocks along the way where we were waiting for policy guidance to get this for the service members.
Just Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Colonel, so in October, the appropriation was allocated through Congress. And so now is the direction going to DFAS to distribute the funds, or are each of the different departments required to set up a policy on how this is paid? The bureaucracy is boggling.
Mr. Chair, Representative, actually, since the services came out with it themselves, they're going to use existing funds, military personnel funds, to pay for it. So Congress took action authorizing them to use their existing funds. So there wasn't an appropriation, just an authorization for the services to do it. And in the language, it says the secretary's concerned. So secretary concerned by federal language means the service secretaries. So each service secretary will have to issue implementation guidance. On the 1st of February, the Secretary of Defense did issue some implementation guidance directing the service secretaries to do that. But again, this is October 28th. The law was passed. February 1st, Secretary of Defense takes action, and we still need the service secretaries to take action before the implementation guidance is out for the soldiers to get the money. But there is adequate money in the military personnel accounts for that based on what they get through the OCO, the Overseas Contingency Operations Supplemental, and the base funding.
Okay.
Thank you, thank you, Mr. Chair. And you can see that Washington works on a whole different level.
Okay. Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Colonel Alness, I'm sure you can answer this, but for service members who died as a result of subsequent service or died for any other reason following this, do you know if the program as it is proposed to be to work, is if it's set up for their survivors so that they'll receive the funds that the service member otherwise would have received?
Colonel Alness.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, in fact, the provision provides the service secretaries can either put the people on order so they can earn the benefit and get paid that way, or the service secretaries can give $200 a day to the service member for the benefit that they earned. In conversation with congressional staffers, they said that an estate of an individual could also make a claim on their behalf. So if a person is subsequently separated or if they had died, they would be eligible for that funds.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, and who would make sure that we get in contact with either the service member who is separated or their families for deceased veterans.
Colonel Aldous.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the Department of Defense has purified the list of the individuals who should have it, but they will go through, since there is not implementation guidance, I don't know how they will approach it. I suspect, based on what I've heard, is that there will be a list going out for the states to validate that will take care of most of the individuals. So our hope is there will not be an individual action requirement, but there will also be a provision for individuals who are not included in that list that they could submit their packet probably to the Service Board of Military Record Corrections, where they could have their case heard and then get the benefit if deemed they're eligible. Mm-hmm. But again, until implementation guidance out, I'm just speculating.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, just a comment. I would hope that we have more outreach from our own department, you know, to make sure that we get in contact with these people and not wait for someone to have to submit a request, because oftentimes people don't get around to it, they don't think of it, they don't get the message somehow. So I think we should have a strong outreach program to make sure we get to all of those veterans who are separated and to families of deceased veterans. Thank you.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to follow on to that, is this automatically paid to those who are on the rolls, or is there a requirement for a request for benefit on this one?
Colonel Aldous.
Mr. Chair, Representative, fortunately, until the implementation guidance comes out, I'm not sure how the services will handle it. It is our hope that they will do something that we validate a payroll that's been sent out by the payroll service, so we can validate as many as possible and add people that we know that would be excluded. But again, until that comes out, I can't tell you definitively. I'm sorry.
Okay, anything further, committee? I should ask, too, anybody from the audience that would like to testify. Okay. Closing comments.
Wish that you would pass this resolution out of committee, and I also want to let you know that the House will be welcoming back the Red Bulls today in the House floor. So you'll be able to talk to the leadership of the Red Bulls in the retired room afterwards. I hope you take that opportunity to welcome them.
Okay, good. Thank you. Anything further? Representative Newton renews his motion that House File 2908 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Okay. Well, I want to welcome everybody back this year, and including our staff, but we do have one new staff member here from the Republican Caucus, and Ms. Martine, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Margaret Martine. I'm the new GOP House researcher, and I should speak into the microphone. I have a PhD from the University of Michigan, political science, and also a degree from the London School of Economics, and I've been working in think tanks and teaching in academia at Carleton and Augsburg and a variety of places around the state, and this is my first stint in government.
All right, thank you and welcome. And also we have a new committee administrator this year, Abby Bryduck, and if you'd like to introduce yourself to the committee.
Hi there, Abby Bryduck. Not as impressive as a resume as Margaret has. Wow. We're honored to have you with us. But I usually do, I'm the CA for Transportation, Policy and Finance also, and a Navy brat. My grandfather and my father were both in the Navy Medical Corps. So.
Dave.
Thanks.
Dave.
All right, thank you. Anything further, members, before we adjourn? All right, committee adjourned.